This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. 2 years ago, a strange structure began rising on the banks of the Mississippi River. It had a name, Avis Spiralis, Latin for spiral bird, fitting for a kind of coil designed as a bird blind, a temporary home for the hundreds of species of migratory birds that travel through the St. Louis area every year. But there's something else that's fascinating about this structure. Not just the birds that visit it, or its 20-foot-tall stature, but its material. Avis Spiralis is made of a special kind of concrete that its creator hopes will keep it standing for very many years to come. That creator is Washington University Associate Professor of Architecture Pablo Moyano Fernandez. He joins us now to talk about that structure and what's gone into making it. Pablo, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Pablo, let's begin with the concrete. You've spent years, decades actually, studying concrete. Why?
Well, I think I can. This can take me back until when I was pretty young. I come from a family that my older brother is a civil engineer, another one of my brothers is an architect. So I grew up in construction sites. So I was very exposed to materials, and concrete is one of the primary materials back in my country, but I think I would say all over the world. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my first interaction with the material.
What was it that interested you about it?
Well, actually, the one thing about concrete that distinguishes the material from all construction materials is the plasticity, so the fluidity. If you think about construction materials, concrete is the only one that is actually fluid when you mix it and then becomes very, very strong when it's cured. So for me, that plasticity that the material has was an inspiration for, as a designer, became immediately an inspiration for my research.
Mm-hmm. Now, concrete is a building material, and you've mentioned that the fluid becoming hard, mm-hmm. solid, and it's created by mixing cement with things like sand and rocks. And obviously, there's much more to concrete than what I've just said. But I understand that your interest in concrete is quite specific to a process called casting. What is important to understand, Pablo, about that process and what comes out of it?
Right. So concrete, because it's fluid, it relies on a mold. So it's intrinsically connected, right? So because it's formless, you need a form to give a shape, that whatever shape you want to create. So that makes mold making almost is completely indispensable to do anything in concrete. So my research really focused on that aspect of the not only on the material itself, but in the making of mold in order to give shape to the material. And so today's construction, we rely on all the industry that the concrete industry relies on traditional standard formwork. And I was interested in looking for alternative ways of doing formwork. And that's a starting point of my research.
Mm-hmm. Was there something that you saw or experienced that made you want to pursue that?
So I saw some, one of the persons that inspired me is Mark West. He is, I think right now he's at MIT. I don't know if he's still at MIT, but he's one of the pioneers using fabric as formwork. So for me, that's really inspiring because we are used to formwork that are solid, typically made of metal or wood. But that was something that a few years ago I looked at his work and I was kind of inspired by that. I didn't do my research on that, but that really triggers my interest into alternative ways of doing formwork that could be more innovative but also more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. This use of concrete, I mean, humans have been doing this for a very long time. What is it that you wanted to bring to it that when you started your research maybe was missing and that you have seen develop over time?
Well, one of my interest is in making it accessible for everyone, right? So that's something that if you look at concrete all over the world, one of the fascinating things about the material is you can see it applied to high-tech, high-end buildings and products, but also very low tech, low technology, low primitive, you know, ways of making. And for me, that was fascinating because a material that, because it's available virtually almost anywhere, because the way it's made, so that allows almost anybody to build with the material. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea of using more contemporary ways of using formwork with a very traditional material, that blend between those two things, it kind of prompt my research. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, ultimately, my intention is to make it available for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, everyone, including birds.
Yes.
And you spent the last 2 years or so working on this 20-foot-tall concrete bird blind, again called Avis Spiralis, and it opened in October. I want to describe it a little bit. It is made of gray concrete, but it has this organic feeling, and I'd mentioned to you, when I saw it, I thought immediately of some of the work of Hayao Miyazaki, who's an anime god.
Mm-hmm.
The spiral curves go upward, and the top is rounded into an enclosure, and these walls have holes, and then together they make up the outline of several, you know, larger-than-life birds. So producer Danny Wisentowski mentioned that it looked more like an interesting pasta than a concrete block, you know, with hard angles.
Mm-hmm.
What was the origin of this idea?
All right. So, well, you mentioned a couple of things. This idea of organic definitely has to do with the material because of the fluidity of the material has, it allows to do virtually any shape, right? So that's part of the idea. The other thing about this project is I try to, as I mentioned earlier, to challenge conventional formwork. So a project like Avis Spiralis is all customized. So every mold, not every mold, but a lot of the molds are different. So I give you a very particular shape, this spiral. So if you have to do that project by regular means, like a typical construction company, it will cost you really, really a large amount of money because it's basically completely custom. Not to mention the indentations and the holes that the project presents. So all that features, it would be extremely expensive to do it in a conventional way.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, and that kind of prompt the idea of using small molds that can be interchangeable and reusable to do complex geometries. That was the prompt of the research, to do non-conventional geometries, non-conventional textures with affordable means and reusing formwork. That's another big part of the research project. All the molds that I use in that project can be reused over and over, so that way you don't have to. The concrete industry is very wasteful. Unfortunately, they do a lot of replacement of pieces because they get deteriorated when you use it for formwork, and sometimes can be reused, but sometimes cannot. So it's very wasteful. Mm-hmm. So the project really taps into a much more idea of reusable molds.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, the spiral shape, I was inspired by, you know, the big birds when they are circling around a prey or something they're interested in. They have this motion on the sky, the very slow and very kind of like helicoid, and that kind of inspired this idea of the project. Combined with the fact that when you do a linear wall, like the project is a single wall, but it's curved, it creates a spiral, by virtue of the shape, it makes a much, much stronger structure. And that's another reason why this is a spiral.
Mm-hmm. And to give people a sense of what all went into this, the spiral is a single 120-foot-long
mm-hmm.
wall. So I'm just imagining what it would be like to go inside there.
Right.
The method that you used to build this bird blind is opus versatilium. It's Latin for versatile work, and it's actually a method that you developed, Pablo. How did you do that? How did you develop this approach?
Well, this technique that I developed, it was actually based on Roman construction. You know, the Romans are known to be basically the masters of the concrete, actually the inventors of the concrete. So I was inspired by the way they build walls. Just to describe very briefly, the way they do, for example, the Colosseum, the Pantheon, buildings that are still standing today out of concrete, is they use rocks and bricks, sometimes a combination, sometimes one of the two. place them, stack them next to each other with a gap in between, and they fill that gap with concrete. So that's how the Romans built aqueducts and built most of the buildings that you know. And that's why they are so durable, because all the concrete is protected by these rocks and bricks against the weather and the time, actually. So that's how they actually build walls. So that process of using two molds on both sides and then casting concrete in between prompt the idea of this opus versatilium, which is the system that I developed. So the opus versatilium takes that idea, but with contemporary tools, for example, digital fabrication, but also using a high performance concrete that I can explain later what it means. And basically combining stronger concrete with small 3D printed molds, you can actually build the same way the Romans built, but with addition of being able to do highly complex shapes, but also highly complex and sophisticated textures. And you can really expand the repertoire of design opportunities with this casting system.
Mm-hmm. And you did spend some time working with Clayco doing architectures specifically, mm-hmm. and the way that Clayco uses concrete is very different from your opus versatilium method. What is it that Clayco and other, you know, companies that use concrete doing that feels like, you know, your method is offering something that is different?
Right. So the opus versatilium is a cast-in-place method. So concrete, basically, you have four ways of doing concrete for the most part. The most common one is cast-in-place. Basically, you have formwork, you cast the concrete in place, and then you take the formwork out, and then you get your structure. The other one is tilt-up, which is casting concrete on a flat floor, and then you tilt it up on site, and then you get your structure right there. That's a very, very economic process. And then precast. Precast is basically similar to tilt-up, but you do it in a factory, and you have to transport it to wherever the site is. And then the last one is CMU, or concrete masonry unit, which is basically a big block out of concrete that then you stack it up the same way you do masonry construction in general. So Clayco does both, the most common, which is cast in place, but also they do tilt-up. That's what the actual company make. It was very famous to spread the system all over the country. So I learned about the system that has a lot of potential, but also limitations. And basically, that was kind of my... So the opus versatilium, what it can offer is the cast in place, but using small molds. So then you can reuse the molds, and then you're not only saving material, but also allowing you to do complex geometries without necessarily highly skilled labor to do that.
Mm-hmm. This is a good spot to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about concrete with WashU Professor of Architecture, Pablo Moyano Fernandez. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Pablo Moyano Fernandez. He's a WashU professor of architecture and the creator of Avi Spiralis, or Spiral Bird, at the Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary, located on the banks of the Mississippi River, just north of St. Louis. Before the break, we were talking, Pablo, about opus versatilium. And it is a method of concrete making. This is what you used to build this 20-foot-tall bird blind. What made this the right method to use for Avi Spiralis specifically?
Well, I think the main reason is the complexity of the geometry of the project. So to make it, when you use small molds, can be 3D printed or not, doesn't matter how you actually do the molds, but they have to be small molds that you can actually reuse. that makes a project like this one, which has this complex geometry, to make it affordable, let's say, right? So in a way that is reasonable. Because if you had to make it with traditional means, meaning a traditional construction company doing the same project, it will be very, very, very expensive. Another aspect of the project I want to bring up is the concrete, as you mentioned, is a composite material based basically on cement, sand, rocks, and then water, but also some additives called admixtures that makes the concrete stronger and much more durable. So if you think about the aggregates, so this project has about 85% of the components of the project are locally sourced materials. I'm using local sand from the Missouri River, and then local limestone for rocks coming from a quarry that is only 4 miles from the site. So for me, that was very important to use local materials to support local economies, but also to minimize the environmental impact of structural like this. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that I'm importing is basically the cement, which is what you have to do for any project that you actually do in concrete.
What are some of the practical insights that you gleaned from your experience of working on this bird blind?
So one thing about this method that I developed, I think has a lot of interesting, compelling aspects, but of course has some aspects that are not, that I discovered, that are not, maybe, they have to be adjusted. One of them is time consuming. So not only because I have to work on this project primarily on my own, I have some help, but I think the vast majority of the casting I did on my own. So it takes a lot of time. So that's something that, you can look at that as a downside, but at the same time, it will allow whoever is working on it, I mean, have people collaborating and working on a project like this. So I imagine a project like this being implemented, imagine in an area where, you know, people don't have the means to hire a contractor or a company. So because it's the simplicity of the system, it can actually be done by people that don't have a background in construction.
Mm-hmm. This gets to what you had talked about with people, affordability, durability, this interest in concrete and buildings. You know, over the summer is something that you wrote about, and you wrote an essay that made a case for concrete as, quote, the future of affordable housing. Now, St. Louis has some past experience with this, and the Pruitt-Igoe housing complex used concrete to build 33 high-rise apartment buildings, and that project ended as an infamous failure with a televised demolition in the 1970s. But your vision for using concrete in affordable housing is different, Pablo. Tell us about that.
Yes. Pruitt-Igoe, of course, is a big, you know, it has made the news because of what you mentioned, a failure as a, is really a, has a lot of socioeconomic issues that come with the project that actually make the failure of the project. It has nothing to do with the material itself. The structure of Pruitt-Igoe was built out of concrete, but the buildings themselves, the cladding, is all brick. Brick and CMU and concrete masonry unit. But to touch on the affordable way of using concrete, the article that I wrote is basically about a project that I developed. It's a different project. It's basically precast that is using rings to make relatively small homes in a very, very efficient way. So for that project, I'm using what's called ultra high performance concrete, which is a very innovative material that is a better product than concrete that allows to drastically reduce the amount of concrete that you use, and yet keep a very strong, robust, and resilient structure. So, but also these rings that I'm proposing for this project are actually make the structure and the enclosure at the same time. So basically, concrete is doing everything. It's giving you, it's protecting you from the weather, meaning the water, moisture, wind, snow, and all the environmental conditions, but also it's providing the structure of the project, a very strong structure. These panels are also insulated, so between the insulation plus the thermal mass that concrete naturally brings, it makes a very thermally efficient envelope. So, and that's what I meant with affordable housing. When you think about affordability, it's not just low price. Of course, that's very important. But most important for buildings is the operational cost. So a building in general, if you think about any building, about 25% or even 20 to 25% of the cost is basically on construction and design. The remaining 80 to 75% is operational cost. And that's when really the sustainable aspect or the affordability aspect come into play. How much does it take to maintain, right, that building, to properly maintain, to perform adequately over a long period of time, typically decades? And that's when a material can play a big role, in, like concrete, for example, into providing a very not only resilient but also affordable and durable envelope.
Mm-hmm. And as a last question, do you think that there is an appetite for that now?
Well, if you think about the news today, you know, we hear about this more often than ever: hurricanes, tornadoes, hailstorms, fires, flooding. Everything that I mentioned, concrete is perfectly capable of withstanding all of those conditions. I think there is definitely a market for that. The issue is there is a long tradition of building in wood in this country, particularly single-family residential. So that's why that article is trying to bring up to show an alternative that is, in my opinion, way more durable, way more resilient, and ultimately more sustainable than any other type of construction.
Pablo Moyano Fernandez is a WashU professor of architecture. He's also the creator of Avi Spiralis, or Spiral Bird, at the Riverlands Migratory Bird Sanctuary. Pablo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.